Thanks. All right, then, let's see, we have a couple things left. Item number 71.
Approve innovation funding for 12 proposals for fiscal year 2014-15.
Mr. Miller. And team.
Now, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Fred Miller, Director of OMF. I'm here to give information with several helpers about an ordinance before you to approve 12 proposals from the Innovation Fund, which, of course, you put in the last two budgets. And I think my best purpose here is to explain how we got to these 12, and then you're going to see presentations from five of the 12, Leslie being one of them, all of which will be 2 to 3 minutes, just to give you a sense of what they are. And then by the time we're through, you should understand where we are and what we have left to do. So sometime in September, we inherited this program from the budget office, and it all of a sudden appeared like there's lots of work to do to get things done, to learn from what it was done last time, and then get recommendations to you today. And there's a reason to get here early before the budget process. So we looked around and made the good judgment of transferring Liz Mitchell to us for a while from BTS, who understands the city and knows lots of employees and can help facilitate innovation. So she became our employee to work with three or four others within OMF to sort of spearhead this effort. As we looked at the process from last year, we heard several comments. Now, I'm not sure this is exhaustive, but some suggested that the process was very expensive to prepare proposals from which they might get no money, but they might spend thousands of dollars to get a proposal in, and then it didn't turn out for them, that perhaps they didn't receive enough feedback, and then the decisions got made after the budget process. So there's some confusion about budget proposals and innovation. So with Liz's help, we launched the program to basically establish a panel to review the proposals when we had them. And there were two bureau directors, Sam being one, and I think he's the only one from that panel here, Amalia being the other, and then a couple people from the review panel last year, and then some employees and citizens to look at all the proposals we got. We then asked bureaus for a call for ideas. We said, don't spend thousands of dollars on a proposal. Give us one page with the best ideas you got. We want the panel to review them and give you a thumbs up or thumbs down. If they like it and they want more information, they'll invite a larger proposal of about three pages to hear in the next month. So we had lots of people working on it. We made one more change, something that I think is important in the program, that to help establish a culture of innovation within the city. And we thought big ideas that are the 100,000, 200,000 are hard sometimes, when in fact we think the employees have lots of ideas that with $10,000 might be funded very successfully. So we asked for both what we called micro grants of less than $15,000 to $20,000, and then the larger grants that you saw last time. So in asking for the proposals, we got 45 proposals from 16 bureaus, and we reviewed those internally, gave them to the review panel, and they made the recommendations. They brought back those they got more information from, and all the proposers were able to sit and watch the deliberation of the panel and respond to questions. So I think it felt good in terms of that process. And we ended up with the panel selecting 8 larger projects and 4 micro grants. And so I think we have a pretty good collection. You're going to hear that from a couple of those that were selected. But one of the things we don't want to do is to say the process is now over. We're hopeful that you'll approve this ordinance and we can go ahead with these 12. But we have in mind two more opportunities for our review panel to look at micro grants this year, this fiscal year. Because the basic theory is good ideas shouldn't happen before November 4 when the committee meets and then wait for a year. If someone has a good idea to be funded, they should be able to raise it in January or February and have a chance for us to fund it via the innovation funds. And that'll be some work on our part and employees' part, but I think we'll have a pretty good bunch of proposals and then make other recommendations that we would bring to you. So essentially, that's where we are. Liz, did I leave anything out in the overall? I think what I will do is move out of the way and be ready to respond to questions afterward, but let Leslie begin, and then we're going to have, Liz has orchestrated this well, so we're going to have four more people make presentations of 2 or 3 minutes, and then if you have any questions, I'll be happy to respond.
Okay, great. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor. I'm Leslie Goodlow. I'm the Business Operations Manager for the Housing Bureau, and I'm going to talk to you about our innovation project. Ours is about assisting homeless data. So our city has hundreds of homeless assistance programs operating on an average winter day. Faith-based organizations are about a third of these programs, including the majority of food and substantial portion of all shelter and drop-in services. For example, at our faith-based summit that we had in December, we had 15 churches participate. 8 of those churches do hunger and food services on a weekly basis, and 9 of them provide some type of homeless service, either clothing, shelter, letting families park in their parking lots, a variety of things, which if we had not had that summit, we would not have known about what the services are. So despite the long history of people and them helping people in need, we know very little about what they're doing. And they serve primarily a diverse population. Faith-based organizations have historically steered clear of government because we require a lot of restraints and a lot of rules and things that they don't generally feel like they should have to do in order to provide help to people. This innovation project aims to couple the specialized care and commitment provided by faith-based organizations serving the homeless with city services and housing resources. As part of the proposal, we'll appoint a staff member as a faith-based liaison to work with churches to develop a data and information sharing program. The data sharing program will employ a tool that we call that's XML data transfer in order to make data sharing as easy as possible. This proposal will build on work we started last year with our Innovation Fund project, where we were working with some of our sub-recipients on how to transfer data and to save time so they don't have to do double data entry. That was successful. And this second portion was recommended by Portland State, who was working with the city on the Innovation Fund projects last year. This project aims to create a new relationship, contributing new information to the city's efforts to reduce and end homelessness. It will contribute new knowledge about the needs of Portland residents and the strategies to best meet those needs. Faith-based agencies have very close ties with their communities and are often the first place people reach out to when they're in need. Many of the potential data sharing partners identified serve diverse communities that have not been reached through our traditional outreach efforts. And we have identified 3 churches that we're going to start with for the pilot. Thank you.
Thank you. Great.
Thank you, Leslie. And for the record, I am Liz Mitchell with Office of Management and Finance. And now I'd like to ask Sue Glenn from Parks to join us.
Good morning. My name is Sue Glenn. I'm Zone Services Manager for North Portland Bureau of Parks and Recreation, and I'm the Project Manager for RX Play, the Prescription for Play program, which addresses the widespread inactivity among our youth and the resulting health consequences. Today, Jean Rystrom is with me. Jean is the original founding champion for RX Play. She's retired from Kaiser Permanente. However, she continues to be a tireless advocate for the program. Jean worked closely with the Oregon State Parks, Portland Parks and Recreation, and a variety of health organizations to create the opportunities for prevention, which are core to the Prescription for Play project.
So we know that pediatricians and other healthcare providers routinely provide advice to become more physically active to their patients, but we also know that for some patients, that advice alone isn't sufficient. Being able to follow that advice through the Parks and Recreation with an organized systematic handoff to Parks and Recreation, which then provides a concrete and accessible options to the patient and their family through personal and tailored interaction with a guide, has been a win for the child, the family, healthcare, and recreation.
So this program has evolved from a research-based pilot in 2008 to a citywide rollout 2011 and 12. And during that time, both initial phases identified barriers within the program, barriers which included access, registration fees, staffing capacity. And in 2013, Portland Parks and Recreation was awarded a grant from the National Recreation and Park Association to specifically address those barriers. We are seeing great success. We have increased our capture rates. We have impacted families. We have reached out to families and individuals who either were unable or unaware of our services. By removing these barriers and encouraging physical activity, we are creating socialization opportunities and creating community. The Innovation Fund will ensure that this effort continues. It will fund staff, scholarships, and an outside evaluator to assist us in proving the efficacy of this program. It will convene a panel of experts to assist us in reviewing the model and to assist in obtaining ongoing funding and the replication of RX Play to benefit children and families beyond the Portland city limits. Thank you.
Thank you, Sunjean. Next up, we'd like to have Peter Wojcicki and Kirsten Beyer from PBOT join us.
Good afternoon. I'm Peter Wojcicki. I'm the division manager of street systems at PBOT Maintenance Operations. With me is Kirsten Beyer, a traffic supervisor. She's the one who did most of the legwork for our Innovation Fund project idea here. With over 163,000 traffic signs throughout Portland, they provide all sorts of information to the traveling public in the form of street names, parking, warning, regulatory, and stop signs. Our crews are out there almost daily cleaning them, removing graffiti, adjusting them, making them so they're visible and they're functioning for the public to use. Graffiti has been identified as one item that really sticks out a lot and takes a lot of effort for our crews to clean up. It's identified anywhere between 20 and 40%. 40% of our signs have graffiti on them. And oftentimes it's in the form of ink, paint, stickers, and because it's multiple layers of these type of mediums, that it takes a while for our crews to clean them. And typically, when you're cleaning something, if you do any of that at home or something like that, you typically wear the paint off or something behind it. So we've been really looking out, trying to find something that can help protect our signs in a manner that also provides the retroreflectivity that we need for signs to be seen at night when they reflect off your lights and things like that. About 15,000 of our signs have retroreflectivity on them right now. Most of those are stop signs. About 100,000 of them need to meet retroreflectivity guidelines based on federal law. Over the years, we have tried different products to clean or coatings on the signs. None have provided ease of cleaning protection or have been cost-effective. Our maintenance operations traffic supervisors met with a service-disabled veteran-owned business that introduced us to a new coating that is applied in a three-part compound that will provide both retroreflectivity protection and anti-graffiti protection. These would allow the signs to be cleaned faster and with an environmentally friendly cleaner. And eventually, we hope that we'll be able to allow our neighborhood associations or cleanup crews to be able to clean our signs. Currently, we essentially forbid them from doing that because of the chemicals we use and the damage that can be done to the signs that I detailed earlier. We have also found that this new product will cost on an average of $6 to apply to a stop sign, whereas right now we are currently spending $28 to put a sheet coating on the stop sign to protect its retroreflectivity. So the other final point about this product that we're looking at is what we call is non-sacrificial. You'll be able to clean it over and over and over again, whereas with some of these sheet coatings, once you clean it, you start to wear it off, it diminishes, and then you have to recoat it or replace the sign entirely. So we're really going to hoping to see a great deal of savings in the long term for extended life of our signs, lessening the amount of time we have to spend cleaning them, and being able to redirect our resources elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, clever solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter and Kirsten. And now I'd like to ask Scott Bradway from Water and Lauren Nixon from Human Resources to join us.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Scott Bradway. I'm the Water Quality Information Program Manager with the Portland Water Bureau. And the proposal that we submitted was for a water quality mapping widget. One of the programs that I work with is the what we call the water line. It's a phone line that takes phone calls from our customers concerning water quality questions and concerns. And one of those questions that comes up occasionally is when there's a disturbance in our drinking water system. What can happen is sediments in our system can get disturbed, resulting in discolored, dirty water by our customers. While this is harmless for folks to consume, it's obviously disturbing for people to see and results in quite a few phone calls to our water line. It can overwhelm our staff working the line. And quite often people wonder or will state that they comment that they have searched online looking for information about what's going on with the system and aren't finding anything. So what we're hoping to implement with this proposal is a mapping kind of widget or plug-in to our website. It'll also be mobile-friendly that will allow customers to be able to go to the website, either the homepage or the Water Bureau website, or using their phone, to be able to look up where they're at when they're experiencing this type of a situation and to see what's going on with the drinking water system, to see that there is a main break or some other situation that has resulted in this condition that they're experiencing. It'll also provide them with a link to find more information as to what they can do to remedy the situation or when the situation might improve. So this widget will hopefully relieve some of the phone calls that we get. It will also help put information out there for people who don't know about our water line and who don't know currently where to go get information, who just go to our website looking for what's going on. Ultimately, we hope to be able to partner with other bureaus to be able to increase the scope of this program, to be able to put other information out there that the city's doing, such as road construction or road closures, other work that might be happening at a park or sewer work that's happening. So I think it holds a lot of potential.
Great. It's a clever idea, and it may be the first time in the history of government that the word widget has ever actually appeared in an ordinance.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Lauren Nixon. I'm with the Bureau of Human Resources. The Innovation Project is an opportunity to support our workforce today and prepare them for tomorrow. In 2013, the Bureau of Human Resources launched its first e-learning training program, and to date, over 3,300 employees have successfully completed the program. The Training and Workforce Development Department will continue to create new e-learning training programs in the next fiscal year. E-learning training offers a multitude of benefits. It improves efficiency because participants don't have to wait for a scheduled course and travel to a central location. Instead, the training comes to them on their time. And it's responsive to a rapidly changing environment. We can easily edit the content, delivering up-to-date and timely information. It's really an all-inclusive package that saves the city valuable time and resources while delivering high-quality training. However, employees must have access to a network computer in order to take the e-learning training. And currently, we estimate that between one-third to one-half of our city's workforce does not have regular access to a network computer. So to bridge that technology gap, we're asking the Innovation Project to fund a $10,000 pilot project to acquire and deploy training tablets. These training tablets will be specifically designed for e-learning programs to bring e-learning to employees out in the field. The Bureau of Human Resources will manage and administer the distribution and maintenance of these training tablets, and bureaus can opt in to use them. By investing in the city's workforce, e-learning training provided on the training tablets will save resources and improve efficiency and develop our workforce through emerging mobile technology. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott and Lauren. I'd like to thank all of our presenters, and we've been very pleased with the 12 project proposals that the panel has recommended. Thank you for your time and your support of the Innovation Program, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Liz or Fred or anyone involved in this?
Question, Mayor. They all seem great. The one from the Water Bureau seemed just exceptionally great.
You're not biased.
I wanted to ask them whether they felt that Chairman Miller was parsimonious in the allocation, or whether the council can override the parsimonious Miller.
Any pinching Fred is coming to defend himself here.
As it happened, I don't think the committee even looked at where the proposals came from in terms of commissioners or bureaus. But just by chance, we did have one from each of your areas in this presentation. So that part was an odd coincidence, but the selection was not.
Were there enough resources to fund the basic ask of the ones you selected?
Yes. And we have some remaining looking for microgrants coming in, and so we'll keep you posted on how that goes.
I think the cost of some of these projects is pretty modest. I was impressed at that as well, not only the innovation itself, but the fact that people figured out how to do some of these things for a relatively small amount of money. So that was pretty impressive as well.
Well, in the whole process, I think Sam made the most meaningful comment on what should we be looking for, things that don't cost a lot of money that you normally wouldn't budget, where there's a risk, but there could be a huge payoff. Mm-hmm. And those things we tend not to fund. But if you're looking at research on the private side, you like to try new things and fail early. And if we do that, some of these things aren't going to work if we try something that is on the edge. But we've got to, at this stage, we're not being too risky. But I think we need the culture when the good ideas are there. We're saying we're here to try new things.
So in adding up the numbers, it looks like $330,000 is being allocated to OMF for staff and training. Is that correct?
No, it's not. I'm not questioning your adding. We did want to do something with some supervisory training to facilitate the implementation of ideas. We haven't done that, but we have, whatever, $660,000 here, some money for Liz. We've got $200,000+ not spent, and right now, again, there are micro grants in the offing. It could be we don't spend the full million, but we're not. It's not OMF using.
So how much is going to administration within OMF?
At this point, the only funds that have been designated for administration are for the position that I am in, which was $125,000. And we're not going to spend all that because
it's not a full year. But right. That's what you approved in the fall bump.
Is the plan to continue that?
That
the administrative position at 125.
I think we need to make a proposal in the next budget process to say how we'd expend the funds. We're learning this year. I think we're better this year than last. We'll be better next year.
And did you say that there's a member of the selection committee here?
I think just Sam.
Would you mind coming to answer some questions?
Actually, Commissioner, may I ask Fred one more question?
Well, I'm not
okay.
done yet.
All right.
Because I think that I just wanted Sam to join. I'm sure you'll all have answers to this question. Thank you very much for serving, and I agree. There's a lot of great projects, and the range of projects is better. Obviously, the bureaus are learning how to write successful applications. My question relates to the evaluation about equity, and I noticed that at least one of the funded grants doesn't really address the equity question as far as who benefits and who is burdened, and I wondered if you could talk to me about the discussion at the committee about equity issues.
Sam Hutchison, Bureau Director at FPDR and on the Innovation Selection Committee. It was brought up from virtually everyone is what type of innovation, who did it serve, did it serve directly, would it indirectly serve equity? And there are a few that don't because they're internal, but it was definitely, we had at least two members that were very committed to discussing the diversity and equity in the proposals, as well as it came up and most of the members discussed. So it was actively discussed and actively a criteria.
And how are the applications screened to make sure that the written application should be responsive to that question?
I'm not certain of the screening because they were presented to us, but we did ask questions because that was one of our criteria to look at in the selection. So if we did not see it, we asked questions of the finalist groups that we were.
And I'd be happy to add on to that. For the projects that were asked to come back for round two, we did ask for an in-depth project proposal focused on who would benefit and what equity, how this would promote equity and also promote opportunity and to whom. And so the proposers had that criteria out there, and the panel had five filters that we asked them to use to evaluate the proposals when they came back. And they were, do you think the proposal is innovative, original? Does it show strategic creativity? Are other funding sources taken into consideration? Is the Innovation Fund the best funding source? Can this project be carried out with the information put forward, including the estimated budget? Are the key partners on board, and are there benefits to the proposed project? Does it advance equity? Does it provide opportunity? Is there potential for greater benefits with broader applications? So those were the filters that we asked the panel to put each of the projects through, and if they had passed all of them, then to move them on.
Okay, thank you. That actually answered my next question, which is a concern about cost savings, because when this proposal was first put forward in the budget, the expectation was that there was going to be a payback, either short-term or long-term, in cost savings, but that doesn't sound like that was one of your criteria.
It was not a focus this year. The focus was, I mean, it's certainly out there, but the stronger focus was on the equity and opportunity that we heard from last year's panel and from council last year, as well as making sure that we are building an innovative culture within the city.
Other questions for the team?
Fred, I note that two of the proposals were based on ideas submitted by people named Bradway. So I'm wondering if you could talk to Anna Canwit about expanding our Bradway recruitment effort.
I'll certainly take that under advisement.
Something genetic going on there. Thank you all very much. Anyone signed up to speak on this item?
Yes, we have three people. Come on up. Lightning, Michelle Munt, and Charles Johnson.
Come on up. Okay, Lightning, you're on first.
Thank you. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning PDX Rethink Lab. I definitely like this innovation fund. And a lot of the ideas I think being presented are actually very good ideas. And I come from more of a side of creativity and creating your own ideas. And I think this is really a great thing to have. I'm looking at the funding. I was a little bit more interested on the amounts that you funded toward different projects. I didn't know if that would be like a across the board, say at $50,000 each one, but I noticed you have different amounts, so I wasn't really quite sure how you came up on providing more funding to one and quite a bit less for the other. So that's just something that I'll try to understand later.
And based on what they requested, I think.
Okay, that's you've answered my question to that. So I guess if some people might have put in a higher number, they might have possibly gotten higher. So that's a fair answer. Now, one of the things that I like about this, and I'm referring to mainly on the homelessness, on the data sharing, what I'd like to see possibly is more data on more of a daily count of people that are homeless, say on a quarterly basis out through the city. But why I mention that is I want to see more of a maybe a more of a sophisticated system set up to where we really monitor that number. And I'm talking about where people get their food, if they're chronically homeless outside. I want to have that data to really understand that number, how it's changing with the population, with people moving out of the state, people moving into the state. I really want that number to even be broken down to central downtown, east side, certain areas by the block. I want that number accessed. I want it accessed on a quarterly basis. And I want to understand on when we look at those numbers, how much more housing do we need? How much more services do we need? How much more money do we need? But we need to have that number, and I know that number changes all the time, but it's a very important number to have on a quarterly basis to project out on what we really need to do each year. Again, on the property management, real property management, I want to have a closer eye on the real estate assets of the city. I want to understand a lot of other areas, so let's really focus on that. Now, one other issue on this funding, I don't have an issue on how it's being funded. Can we present this as one future potential to a foundation to cover this cost, to match this, and to cover the cost for the city? I think this is very beneficial. I would think a lot of foundations would be open to discussing this and understanding the benefits throughout the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle? Okay. Charles?
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm glad that Lightning retouch on the issue of homelessness. I know that it's a difficult issue for to find funding in places. There are federal restrictions. We kind of know that we just need more units, and Commissioner Schaltzman and all of you have worked to take steps in that direction. Last night I was particularly aware of which doorways already had people asleep prior towards 10 o'clock, and I hope that next year we might have some capacity to directly approach people and engage, have a facility where we can actually rescue people and actually just accost people and actually be glad that some homeless people, all they want to do is rest. They would prefer to do it in a warmed structure, but we don't have any warmed structures available for them. And I hope that next year we will have a place where maybe we can have a program that actually does what good people can do, but people are really afraid to do with their home, and that's actually go find sleeping people and say, there's a cot, there's a mat in a certain place, and not only do it when the temperature is ridiculously low. The other, I originally came up because, of course, as the mayor noted, we get to say widget in the record.
Really? And when's that ever happened?
And I didn't get a chance to research the widget project, but I have seen on Facebook multiple people complaining about water quality and sediment. And I hope that Commissioner Fish will have a chance to work with the widget guy and maybe move to the front of the Water Bureau page a quality reporting widget, which even may perhaps proactively relieve some of the higher workload that comes up, so that when data comes in and says that there's a sediment problem in a certain area, it'll be easily found on the front page of the portlandoregon.gov/water, and people may see a map where it's highlighted, and that they can know that maybe a crew has been dispatched to do a sediment flush by opening a hydrant or whatever. And if there is a problem with call volume coming in, perhaps you can even cost-effectively robocall people and say, we're aware there's a sediment problem. There's no need to call. A crew is dispatched to such and such time, as a service tracking ticket type thing. Thanks, y'all.
All right, thank
you for that suggestion, Charles. And we have 930-something thousand customers, and I get copied on some of the letters we get from customers, and I just want to do a shout-out to the customer service people because they really do a great job. And we can always do things better in government, but that's one area that I can assure you there's a very high level of service and responsiveness. But we appreciate your suggestion.
Great. Anyone else? Then if there are no further council questions, we'll take a roll call on the ordinance.
Fritz.
So I voted for the budget, which includes this $1 million, and therefore I'm going to support this ordinance. I'm very concerned. Obviously, the list has many, many good projects. I'm very pleased that three of the 12 are Portland Parks and Recreation, and pleased that the bureaus are addressing the equity criteria. There may be other ways to fund these, and some of them may indeed be reprioritizing within the bureaus. If the main criteria this year was equity rather than on saving money, then I would suggest that bureaus should be reprioritizing their existing funding to be more equitable. I hope that, Mayor, that we have a specific discussion about this in this budget process about the Innovation Fund, because I'm not seeing the kind of cost-saving projects that I was hoping for when we allocated them. And I believe we should be looking at things like implementing 311, which is the most innovative thing that we have on the agenda right now. We know we're going to need millions of dollars for it, and that would be one way to dedicate this money. We know that we need more money to save in transportation to pay for paving so that we don't have expensive road repairs to be done. So I'm concerned that although these projects are all great and they do good things, almost everything we're asked to do before the council is proposing to do great things, and there's a finite amount of money. But I do respectfully vote aye.
Fish?
Proposals, and thank you, Fred Miller, for your stewardship of this and the committee staff. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you. I think the process, as Fred said, gets better each time. I know that from serving on the Children's Levy, our process for making tough decisions about how to spend money when you have many more requests than you have money available, we have also improved our processes over time, and I think you're doing the same thing, and these sound like great proposals. Aye.
Novick?
I think this is just great. And I congratulate and thank the mayor for giving the bureaus an opportunity to show that we can be innovative and we can do significant things with small amounts of money. And I think that these are valuable things to do, but it's also an incredibly valuable message to send. So I am pleased as punch with the whole idea and with the specific proposals this year. Thanks to Fred for and his team for shepherding through the process. Thanks to all the bureaus for their proposals and their work. I think this is just awesome. Aye.
Hales.
Well, well done. I think the process is working well. Just reminiscing a little bit, the council knows I'm going to be out of town next week. I'm going to be out of town next week for the same reason I was out of town 2 years ago, the same week, and that is because I got invited to go to a U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting followed by a Saturday morning conference about innovation in cities, which Andrew Scott attended with me 2 years ago. And, of course, we heard the idea of an innovation fund and how it had worked in other cities on that Saturday morning. But prior to that, I was getting to know a few of the mayors at this meeting, and it was a pretty impressive meeting. We got to meet with the president, members of his cabinet, but I was agonizing a little bit out loud to Greg Fisher, who is the mayor of Louisville, who's a little more experienced at this than I was, and said, I'm just still wondering how much time I should spend on any of this extracurricular stuff. I mean, it looks like the U.S. Conference of Mayors is a good thing. It looks like this innovation conference is worthwhile, but, you know, I need to be home minding the store. And so how do you, Greg, strike that balance? And he said, well, Mayor, how many people do you have working for your city? Well, about 5,600. Why? I said, well, how many of them have in their job description big picture thinking or research and development? I thought, well, you could kind of say our bureau directors and council members are supposed to exercise big picture thinking, but I'm not sure if it's in our job description. I'm pretty sure almost no one has research and development in our job description. And, of course, this guy, if you've checked him out, is a very successful business person who then decided to spend a tour of duty in public service. And I got the point, which is that we ought to exercise some big picture thinking and we ought to exercise an effort at research and development. We ought to encourage people to try things and fail and try something else after that. And that's very much the idea here. So I got the point with him. I think we've all got the point that this is an idea worth doing at a modest scale with some that are going to succeed and some that won't, but every time we learn something. So I appreciate the great work being done in the bureaus and by Fred and his team to evaluate these. And thank you, Sam, and others who served on the committee. So far, so good. And I look forward to seeing what kind of widgets we hear about next year, as well as the results of these widgets this time. Got to stop. Got to keep using that word. Aye. Okay, we have a couple.